Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we have our final Best Picture nominee, The Fablemans, a movie directed by Steven Spielberg about Steven Spielberg making movies.
Woo! So. We did it, Jared. We got the movies done in time. I'm so proud of us.
We did. There were some highs. There were some lows.
Some lows.
Triangle of sadness.
There were some real lows.
There were some mediocres. But we've gotten through all of them, and now we are ready for the Academy Awards coming up Sunday night.
Let's do this. I have so much to do to prepare.
So we do have some news real quick on this episode. First up, Vanderpump Rules reality TV show. I've not been following the drama, but I know there's drama.
Everything.
Katie is going to give you a quick recap on the drama happening with Vanderpump Rules.
Yes. Jared and I, we're excited to get to this episode, but we're like, there's news. So we're timing ourselves.
A lot of news.
I have 2 minutes I'm allowed to talk about this. So I unfortunately have watched every episode of Vanderpump Rules. I'm glad my parents don't always listen to the podcast. They'd be so ashamed. Anyway, so Raquel, who used to date James Kennedy, she has been hooking up, and that means sexual, because some people hooking up is just kissing. I hope somebody laughs out loud in their car when they hear this. Hooking up with Tom Sandoval. He's the less funny Tom, if you will, because there's two Toms on the show. And he's been dating Ariana Madix for 9 years, living together, blissfully happy, kind of, it seems. Everybody loves Ariana. I stan her forever, and she is also very, very open about her mental health journey and body image, and she's stunning, and I love her. And how dare Tom? And also, I was never a big Tom Sandoval fan, so I'm not really surprised by this behavior, but what's gross about it is he was hooking up with Raquel in their house, like the house he shares with Ariana, and this has been going on for some 6 odd months, and they might be in love, and then the whole big scandal, besides just the cheating and just being an overall douchebag, is that Raquel was allegedly filmed during some kind of sexually explicit content and said it was without her consent. Listen, I'm not going to victim blame here. I'm not going to say what's true and what's not true. I'm just not really surprised by a lot of the behavior here, but it's caused a big rift. But the most exciting thing, not that I take pleasure in other people's pain, but if you love Vanderpump Rules and you watch the show like I do, they are going to film this for the current season. So the stuff that's unfolding now, we are going to get to see. Like, you don't have to wait 3 years for it to come out. So I do feel bad. My thoughts are with Ariana, and I love her forever. And that's the news.
Okay. Good recap of the Vanderpump Rules drama.
Thank you.
We had one other news item. I already forgot what it was.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Hailey Bieber and Selena Gomez. There is some drama there. Again, we have 2 minutes. Jared might know more than I do. Here's what I can say. I think Hailey Bieber might be one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. Selena, to me, is one of the most lovable people I would actually like to know in real life. Also beautiful. And I appreciate that she, like Ariana Madix, is very open about her mental health journey and all the things that have come along with like having her kidney replaced and lupus and everything else. Anyway, people are saying that they hate each other. Today, March 8th, is International Women's Day. I do not condone pitting women against women. I don't know why we keep doing this. It is so stupid. It is so stupid. But I don't really know the drama. I know the Kardashians are involved. I know people are like also joking about it. They're like, Hailey was seen drinking water and Selena was seen drinking water. What does it all mean? And I'm like, maybe the fact that we're humans and we need water to survive. But
yeah, I think Selena or Hailey Bieber and Kylie Jenner a little bit are just making like mean TikToks about Selena Gomez. I think
but
I don't know. I don't know. I'm definitely team Selena.
I'm team Selena. Hardcore.
I like Only Murders in the Building. And I did not meet Selena Gomez, but I stood next to Selena Gomez.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. We went to Disneyland in California back when I was in high school, and she was on the Disney Channel then. And the hotel we were staying at, she was coming out of the hotel as we were like checking in. And so we stood right next to her. My sister,
I love her.
Audrey, went up to her security guard and asked if she could like get a picture. And the security guard said, are you with her? And Audrey said, no. And then the security guard said, no. And I said, you should have said yes and just seen where it went.
She could have lied. You know what? Audrey has a conscience. The other thing is, just some perspective here, that I have very strong opinions about the Kardashian Jenners. But I'm fine with Hailey Bieber, but she did marry Justin, which gives me great pause. But we have to keep in mind, Selena has Taylor Swift on her side. And if you have Taylor Swift on your side, you're going to win the battle in the long run.
So and Steve Martin Selena. And Martin Short.
So. Hello, hello, comedy gods. We love them. Steve Martin, we've heard it here on the podcast. He's one of my crushes. He's one of the oldest ones. I love him so much. So that's the news. And those are our hot takes on those dramas.
We have two other quick news things. Yes.
Yes. One, Avril Lavigne and Tyga. What?
Wild relationship. What's happening? Just did not expect that to be the relationship that I heard about yesterday.
What? Didn't she also just get break off an engagement?
Yeah, she was with Maude's son for a while.
Maude's son, who was with Bella Thorne for a while.
Yes. Yep.
What a tangled web.
And obviously, like, there's a connection back to, I can't explain how this worked, but there's a connection from Avril Lavigne back to the Kardashian Jenners, you know, obviously because Tyga dated one of the
Jenners for a while.
And then like somehow that got connected to somebody Avril had dated in the past. So I don't know, but Avril Lavigne, Tyga are together. Only other news item I have is the menu is out for the Academy Awards after party.
Hot diggity.
Big dinner. I saw it today. And it was just some wild menu items. So Wolfgang Puck is putting it together.
He always does, I think. Chef.
Yeah, yep. He's done it for many, many years.
Yep.
The appetizer is going to be fish and chips. And then the entree is going to be chicken pot pie. Now, I love a chicken pot pie.
I love a chicken pot pie. Man, I would eat one right now.
If you're in a fancy outfit, I cannot think of anything messier possibly to eat than a chicken pot
pie. But you know what, Jared? Some of those people, those poor things, they haven't eaten in like 3 weeks straight preparing to fit into that Oscar gown. So maybe they're just like, give me the protein, give me the carbs, give me a couple of peas and carrots. And
yeah,
let's call it
a day. What dessert was that was also on there, but it was like appetizer, entree, dessert. I would consider fish and chips an entree. Yeah, that's an the Oscars.
So that's good too, because if you start to look bloated in your dress, who cares? They're only going to take pictures of you in a dark room at the Vanity Fair Oscar party. Mm-hmm. Anyone's going to be there. Wow. Okay. Well, we'll see about that. Also, gosh, if you drink too much at that party, that's not going to be pretty coming back up.
No, sure not. So, but if you want an Oscar, you probably don't care. So.
Yeah. True. Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't care. And that's that's our news, everyone. But I hope you enjoyed. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, final thing was, who do you think's gonna post a picture of them with their Oscar at like In-N-Out or Whataburger? You know, somebody does it every year.
Well,
so.
I was immediately gonna say Florence Pugh, but she's not nominated. So
no.
But she would.
My
do that.
Vote is Jamie Lee Curtis if she wins.
Oh, glory! That is a great Jared. Yes, and you know what? I thought about doing Oscar predictions on this episode. I was like, should I put that in there? But I don't want to give people the answers, and I also don't want to be embarrassed if I'm wrong. So we'll just do that all in the recap. But you guys, Jared and I are we love doing the year wrap up where we talk about like our top movies of the year, and we love doing the Oscar recap episode. And we won't be together this year in person, but we'll be messaging the whole time, guaranteed. We'll both be watching. And Jared, hopefully this year I won't have to let you know that there was an assault on the stage and that you need to get to a screen right now.
Yes, I will be watching live this year, so it'll probably be very boring because I'm watching it as it happens. But yes, we're excited for the
Oscars.
All
16 hours on Sunday. Yes. Can't wait.
So we do have some Oscar facts for you as we get ready for the Academy Awards. These were from BuzzFeed. Just real quick, we were going to run through some of these. First fun fact, you might already know this, but as of 1950, you cannot sell your Oscar without first offering to sell it to the Academy for a dollar. And that rule also applies to heirs after the winner passes away. And the Academy will usually buy it for a dollar. I don't know if anybody's actually tried to sell their Oscar before.
They have. That was in the fun facts on BuzzFeed. I don't remember who it was. There was one really sad one, but people have done this before. But I also think how weird. I don't remember the circumstances. I know it was decades ago, but I do know the guy, his wife was sick, and to pay for medical bills, he was trying. It was not an actor to sell it. He was trying to sell it, I think, to get money, but then he had to offer
bills.
It to the... Yeah.
Okay,
sorry. Anyway, but if you're interested, that was in the BuzzFeed article. Okay, our next fact, it took 81 years for a woman to win Best Director. If you're trying to do the math, but you're like me and you can't do math, the first Oscars were in 1929. So that woman was Kathryn Bigelow for The Hurt Locker in 2010. Great job, Kathryn.
Yes, defeating her ex-husband, James Cameron, that year.
It was a beautiful year, a beautiful ceremony. I'll never forget that moment. Love it.
Also, it took 77 years for a non-white filmmaker to win the Best Director Award. That was Ang Lee for Brokeback Mountain back in 2006. So still yes. not that long ago.
Here's a super depressing fun fact for you. A black filmmaker has never won Best Director, so that's upsetting. But don't be disheartened, because plenty of black filmmakers have been nominated, including Spike Lee. I was about to say Spike Jones, and I was like, it's not Spike Jones.
He has also been nominated, I think, though.
He has, but he's white. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
But I do think it's going to happen, absolutely. So don't despair, everyone. I know it still sucks, but we're just reading the facts for you.
We are. Next fact is that Parasite was the first foreign language film ever to win Best Picture back in 2020. So a couple years ago. That
Such
was very exciting
movie.
When that won. Yeah, great movie. Very good thriller. So
In 1962, Rita Moreno, who is still alive, became the first Hispanic woman to win an Oscar. And an additional fun fact, Ariana DeBose that won, was it last year? For West Side Story, was that last year? She was the second to win. Hold on, let me make sure. I wanna say it right. She was the second Hispanic woman, I believe that's how I would say this, to win, and she won for the same role, which is very cool. Yeah.
Next fact is that in 2003, Roman Polanski won Best Director, decades after being exposed for his pedophilic behavior. He still has issues today. Yep. And in 2018, he was officially expelled from the Academy. He's still making movies today, usually big action movies that come out, usually one or two every couple years. Yes, but Roman did win an Oscar back in 2003. What movie was that for? Was that for
Remember, and I didn't look it up because I can't stand him. But the good news is, people, he's not allowed in the United States, so he's not here because he would be imprisoned if he was.
He won for The Pianist. So
okay, great.
What a depressing movie.
This is a fact that wasn't new to me at all. I think I've mentioned this at least 35 times in my lifetime, but it is upsetting and people should know because I deeply respect Hattie McDaniel. In 1940, Hattie McDaniel broke barriers and became the first Black Oscar winner in history for her role in Gone with the Wind. However, she was not allowed to sit with her co-stars and sat at a small table in the back of the room. She was also not allowed to attend the after party. But don't worry, everyone, because Hattie did make a difference. She did win her Oscar, and it is one of the best performances I've ever seen. And Gone with the Wind is worthwhile, although problematic. It's a very interesting movie. And I think if you like filmmaking, it's a necessary watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you should definitely watch it, you know, once just to appreciate it in terms of when it was made and what it did for films, you know, in the future.
Yes.
The 2000 ceremony was a complete disaster. 55 statues were stolen. More than 4,000 ballots that were cast were lost in the mail. I think they do those online now. Don't think you have to mail them in.
But isn't that crazy? This was before the ceremony happened.
Yeah. 52 of the trophies were found near a garbage bin a week later. It didn't derail the show. The show still went off, but it was obviously messy. And then also the 2017 Oscars, never forget, Best Picture is announced wrong at the end of the night.
Yes.
They announced La La Land. It actually was Moonlight. I remember Katie and I were in the same room watching that.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the defining moments of our friendship in terms of movies would be that. And, you know, our first movie we saw together being Wolf of Wall Street. So.
What a great one, though.
That was also the day we met.
That movie has withstood the test of time for me. That movie is one of the movies that I most loathed when I saw it. I don't even know that I loved it. I was confused and terrified. And then as time went on, I was like, that was genius. That was a genius movie.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and Margot Robbie, obviously, became one of the great loves of my life. So that's where
we
are. But that was fun facts and pop culture. We got to give you the pop culture updates. That's part of the pod.
Of course. So no recommends. We're going to do that on the next episode. We're recording this in Creed 3 on the same night. So we'll talk about that in the next episode, Creed 3, which will be out next week, and Katie will fawn all over Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors in the next episode of Creed 3. So get ready for her thoughts on the two leading men in that movie
so
next
many
week.
Thoughts.
this week we're talking about The Fabelmans, released November 23rd of 2022 and wide release December 13th on streaming. Also had its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival on my birthday. I saw when I was looking this up, September 10th. So
happy birthday, Jared.
Yeah. So Steven Spielberg picked that day just for me. Rated PG-13 for drug use, brief violence, some strong language, and thematic elements. And it's 2 hours and 31 minutes. IMDb is a 7.6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 92%, audience 83%. So both groups are enjoying this movie, critics a little bit more. Yes. Box office-wise, it's made $17 million. Domestically, $36 million worldwide. I think it costs about $40 million to make, so that's a little bit of a disappointment, especially for a Steven Spielberg movie. But I feel like it just wasn't marketed very well. It wasn't as interesting a topic as maybe some of his previous ones that he's done recently. And there was a lot of stuff out around that. You know, the holidays, we had Avatar, we had some other stuff out too. So I think it just got kind of lost with the other movies that were out then. Also, it never came to a theater near me. I was going to watch it in theaters, but it never never showed up here in any theater. So
I was surprised it was gone by the time I was ready to go see it. I watched it. I rented it and watched it.
Yeah. The synopsis for this one is, growing up in post-World War II era Arizona, young Sammy Fabelman aspires to become a filmmaker as he reaches adolescence, but soon discovers a shattering family secret and explores how the power of films can help him see the truth. And it's thought that this is kind of an autobiographical movie that Steven Spielberg made about his life as a young person, high schooler, in terms of him getting into filmmaking and being interested in that. So if you haven't watched it yet, keep that lens in mind when you do watch it. It's directed by Steven Spielberg. Of course, you may have heard of him before. He's known for so many movies, including Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, E.T., all the Indiana Jones movies, except the fourth one. He's been nominated for 22 Oscars.
Yes.
In 1987, he was awarded the Irving Thalberg Memorial Award from the Academy. In 1994, he won Best Director and Best Picture for Schindler's List. In 1999, he won Best Director for Saving Private Ryan. He has two upcoming projects listed, an untitled Frank Bullitt project and Napoleon as well. So that will definitely be an interesting movie when that comes out, which is supposed to come out next year, and will star Joaquin Phoenix as Napoleon. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes, he will be in that. So I think Steven Spielberg... maybe that's a different movie. This movie says it's directed by Ridley Scott, but maybe there's another
Two movies about Napoleon?
Let's see here. I'll try to find that out while we take a break, and Katie will give you the cast when we come back and our likes and dislikes here for The Fabelmans. And we're back on the show talking about The Fabelmans. This movie does not have a large cast, but it does have some heavy hitters in some of the lead roles. One of those is Michelle Williams, who plays Mitzi.
Thank you, Jared. Michelle Williams, fantastic actress. She's originally from Montana, which I thought was very interesting. I don't know a lot of people that are from Montana, so fascinating. She is best known for My Week with Marilyn, Manchester by the Sea, Blue Valentine, Brokeback Mountain, The Greatest Showman, Fosse Verdon, and the beloved show Dawson's Creek. I was a Dawson's Creek watcher myself. That was the first thing I saw her in. She has been nominated for acting Oscars 5 times, people. 5 times. She is darn consistent with her performances. She just gave birth to her 3rd child. I remember because she went on one of the late night shows and she'd given birth like days before. And I was like, how? You are amazing. Women are amazing. And she is married to Thomas Kail. And yes, she did have that long relationship with Heath Ledger. And they did have a daughter, Matilda, from that marriage. I mean, from that relationship, excuse me. She has one upcoming project listed so far, and it's called Fever. But I see mostly everything she's in, so I'm looking forward to that one. Next up, we have Paul Dano. He plays Bert Fabelman. Originally from New York City, Paul is best known for There Will Be Blood, Little Miss Sunshine, 12 Years a Slave, Love and Mercy, and The Batman. His partner is Zoe Kazan. We talked about her on the She Said episode. They have 2 kids together. He has 4 upcoming projects listed, including Dumb Money, Spaceman, and a TV series called Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I didn't look that up, but I thought, I mean, maybe that has something to do with the movie plot.
Yeah, because Paul Dano and Brad Pitt are definitely the same.
The same. I mean, one, like, it's like looking in a mirror. Yes. And if you ever want to hear me talk about how much Paul Dano scares me, go listen to our The Batman episode, because that became quite the joke there. Okay. And then lastly, we have Gabriel LaBelle. He plays Sammy Fableman. So there are a couple iterations of what is we think to be Steven Spielberg's character in the film. So Gabriel plays the main one that we see throughout the most majority of the film. He is originally from Vancouver, Canada. He is 20 years old. He's best known for The Predator, iZombie, Dead Shack, and American Gigolo. Is it Dead Shack? No, I don't think that's right. I think it's Shark. I will fact check that in a second. Because I was typing and the next thing he's in is called The Snack Shack. So I'm thinking that's probably not likely. So I will double check Gabriel. But I was really impressed with his performance. I had not seen him in anything myself. And then this movie does have a great supporting cast. Oakes Fegley is in it, who I know we've mentioned in other episodes. Judd Hirsch, Seth Rogen, Julia Butters, and Keeley Carsten, to name just a few.
I found two things while you were talking there. The Steven Spielberg Napoleon Project is a TV miniseries that will be on HBO. So we are getting the movie with Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Ridley Scott, and the TV miniseries directed by Steven Spielberg. So if you're a fan of Napoleon, lots of Napoleon content will be coming out very soon. Also, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which Paul Dano is going to be in, is an adaptation of the 2005 movie that Donald Glover is the main person behind in terms of producing and directing. Also, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is working on that as well, I think, with some writing and producing. And then Paul Dano will be in the show as well as Donald Glover. So.
I wasn't crazy. He really wasn't something. Gabriel LaBelle, Dead Shack. And then he's next up going to be in The Snack Shack. So apparently, maybe it's something that like a second parter or something. I don't know.
Maybe The Snack Shack. That just sounds like an interesting movie. So I'm really intrigued to see what that's going to be about. I'm trying to look it up right now. Oh, here we go. It's a story about two friends in 1991 in Nebraska City who unexpectedly win a silent auction to run a swimming pool snack shack.
Okay.
Every it's about a concession stand at a swimming pool. I'm going to really have to blow you blown away by the trailer there to go see that one based on the description. So, okay, let's get into our likes for the Fablemans. First up, you get right into the action in this movie. There's not a ton of setup time. You're just kind of, you're going, you're introduced to Sammy, you're introduced to the family as a whole, and then, you know, we're into the plot of the movie. And I did like that. That's something Spielberg usually does pretty well in most of his movies, is that there is not a long setup time. He's normally pretty good at pacing in terms of getting you into the story. And that's the case with this movie once again, is you're just kind of right away, you're into it.
Yes, I agree with you, Jared. I don't know that I even thought, because Spielberg is definitely one of the greatest directors, I think. And I've seen many, many, many of his movies, but I don't know that I watched them on a regular enough basis that I noticed that was something he does well. But I definitely noticed that this movie... I think it helped. I didn't read anything about this movie before watching it. I didn't even know the synopsis. I had watched an interview with Steven Spielberg and Stephen Colbert that was recent. So I knew the stuff that happens with his mom, that is based on some real life stuff. I don't know if it's 100% factual, but I know that was something that happened in his life. But I didn't really know most of it. And I think that helped. But I really liked that we start right with action. There was no like meandering music and you're seeing the lay of the land. And then you slowly meet people one by one over the first 30 minutes. And I appreciated that because it kept the story engaging from the beginning.
Instead of Triangle of Sadness, which the first 30 minutes was just two people.
It was really the only interesting part to me. Yeah.
Yeah. On to the next like. The 1950s obviously was a wild time. Lots of stuff was happening. It was post-World War II, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, things were starting to become more readily available. You find out that the father in this movie, played by Paul Dano, is working for a tech company, as well as Seth Rogen's character. So that's obviously a big thing that is going to become more and more popular as the decades go on in terms of computers and building things for that. And he like repairs TVs too and all this stuff. So he's doing pretty well financially in terms of the opportunities that are available to him. But the 50s just seemed like it was kind of a crazy time. So
yeah, and my note was remind me not to live in the 1950s because the fashion was on point. The fashion was crazy good.
Yep.
That's about it though. But my parents were born in the 50s, but born in the 50s is different from being a teenager or a 20-year-old, you know, in the 50s. But what I mainly meant by that was just seeing the way Mitzi, Michelle Williams, has to live her life. And I actually thought she had a lot of relative freedom compared to what we see in, like, Don't Worry, Darling, when we were seeing that, which I think that's a little bit later, but still. But she just kept having kids. You know, they had four kids in this family. She was expected to always cook, always clean things up, keep the house running. And there's nothing wrong with women who do that now. And there's nothing wrong with one person doing that. I'm not even talking gender roles. It's just crazy that it was automatic. Women do this. They're not to work. They're just having babies. It just seemed like so limited on options and possibilities. And I can't deal with that. But I'm impressed with how Steven Spielberg, he made that so unappealing. Like, he made it so interesting and descriptive, that world, that I was like, ooh, this is pretty to watch, but I want no part of it.
Yeah, I think he knew that maybe things weren't great for his mother and was able to like relay that on screen. So
yes.
Another like for me was I liked Seth Rogen. I always like when
Me too.
People go out of their way to do some different types of roles. I talk about that on the show here a lot, that if you, you know, give me a little range and do something that's not normally what you would do, I'm going to appreciate that. And I thought Seth Rogen in this movie was very good in a supporting role in a drama. Now, he's still got some funny lines and things like that, but, you know, to step out of his comfort zone a little bit and play this role alongside Paul Dano and Michelle Williams, I thought he did a very good job. He didn't really get talked about for any awards or anything.
No.
I don't know if it's that level of a performance, but I thought it was really solid from somebody that you normally see in like gross out comedies. So
yes, Jared, I'm glad you mentioned this because he was one of the people I wanted to talk about. The two I thought Gabriel did a really nice job, but I was impressed with Paul Dano and with Seth Rogen, which is crazy because typically I don't like them in anything. I mean, I think Paul is extremely talented. He just scares the heck out of me. Everything he's in, he just gives me the willies. There's something about him that just scares me to death. He just spooks me out. It's probably because he's so bizarre in literally every film. But this one was so different. And I felt so badly for him for what he was going through. I appreciated his patience, his kindness, his compassion. It felt like he tried to give his wife the things she needed to make her life better. Again, with the freedom thing, it felt like she had a lot more freedom than a lot of women would have at that time. And Seth Rogen, I agree with you, Jared. I was shocked to see him in this role, and he was so likable, and he was not over the top, and he wasn't gross. And that was really a beautiful departure from what I've seen him in before. And for both of them, this is the first thing I've liked that they've done, that where I've liked their characters and how they're playing them, I guess.
Yeah, I really liked Paul Dano as well, just for that fact that you said that normally he plays a different type of character. And this, I think, really shows his range in terms of he's able to play a different role that's not menacing or is not creepy or scary.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing just a suburban dad in this movie for all, you know, intents and purposes. So I thought that he did a really nice job in this and gave a good performance. Don't know if it was Oscar award worthy. Some people are saying he got snubbed from the best actor category, but the performances in that category are so stacked. I don't know if
yeah.
And he doesn't really have a ton to do in this movie in terms of like big, you know, speeches or, you know, big moments. He's definitely more of an understated character, but I thought he did a good job in his role. So
I was kind of shocked by Judd getting nominated. Mm-hmm. Judd's a great actor, and it's cool. His arc is cool because he was nominated way, way, way back when for Ordinary People, I think it was. But he's in this film all of, what, 8 minutes?
10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, and he did a great job in that scene, but I was like, I don't know that that should have won the spot over some of the other things I've seen this year, but that's
yeah,
just me.
It's kind of surprising there.
Yeah.
Another like, the musical score is great. This was done by John Williams.
Always.
So, iconic film composer.
Yeah.
He's done so many great scores. This one is really good as well. Mm-hmm. So
I loved, especially the piano. This was very piano heavy because Mitzi plays the piano and wanted to be a concert pianist. And That's neat, but it's also cool how much he played into the piano throughout all the parts of the film. It was beautiful.
And another like is the story. This really just follows Sammy's character throughout like middle school, high school, early college years in terms of him wanting to make films. And first he just starts filming very simple things like campouts and you know, things like that, trips that his family goes on. And then he kind of throughout the movie upgrades his camera, upgrades his editing equipment, starts filming some more complex things. And then like his big project at the end is he films Ditch Day for his high school and they show it at prom. And you know, everybody loves that. So I really like that progression throughout the movie.
I agree. I was going to say my last, I could probably put these all together. I was just overall surprised with how intriguing the story was. I will admit, I went in with pretty low expectations, not because I don't appreciate the actors, and I think Steven Spielberg's a fantastic filmmaker. I just, since I hadn't looked up the premise, I was like, so I basically just watched him get famous. Like, I already know he's famous. I already know he's a cinematic genius. Like, I'm aware that Steven Spielberg, his brain is amazing. But it was so interesting to have all of these different side plots about his parents and their marriage and how they had to move around the technology that was forming in the 50s, how people were earning money, how films were being made. I learned a lot about filmmaking from this film. I couldn't tell you all the things about, especially when Paul Dano, I was fascinated. This is at the very beginning of the film. He's talking about how motion pictures are, how our brain perceives the movement, so it's a moving picture. I had, if you ask me, as someone who has been obsessed with film my whole life, I couldn't explain to you how that works, like why our brains see moving pictures or how they make that happen on film. So it's fascinating. And if you enjoy films at all or filmmaking, which I've never wanted to be a director, but it's fascinating and this would be a great movie for you to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting in terms of filmmaking, and having worked at a movie theater and dealing with film, I found that part interesting as well, because like we would get the big film reels and they're just a bunch of pictures. So that's all, you know, they don't move until you put them through the projector. And even then, it's just a bunch of pictures, you know, showing very fast. So thought that was cool there. I had two other likes before we moved on.
Ooh,
to
maybe
dislikes.
I will, too.
I liked the part near the end where Sammy is talking with kind of the high school bully. It's after he's shown his film, and the bully is kind of like, why'd you do that? Why'd you make me look good? You made me look great. And he was, you know, he's like, I just capture what the camera captures or whatever. But I think it gave that guy, he respected Sammy a little bit more. He knew that he wasn't just doing it, you know, out of spite. And, you know, he took his hobby a little more seriously, I think, after that, when he saw how the movie turned out and like what a positive light he was kind of put in. So I thought that was interesting to kind of have that interaction near the end. And then also the end scene, thought that was really good, too, where they're talking about the horizon and what makes it interesting. And
I loved that scene.
Don't keep the horizon in the middle. And then the very final shot of the movie, the horizon's in the middle. And right as it ends, he just tilts the camera up. So it's above him.
That was so good.
That's such a classic like Spielberg shot too. He does that in a lot of movies. He did that on West Side Story last year a couple times. So yeah.
And I liked, oh crap, I forgot he did West Side Story. Which I, you know how I felt about it. But
yeah,
that scene, I'm really glad you brought up that scene. I have something and dislikes to say about the bully scene, but I agree with you. I liked it and I disliked it. So I'll pause on that. But have you ever watched a movie where something happens and you grin? Like you smile big, like it's a genuine, you're not, nobody's watching you. That happened to me when the camera panned up at the end. I grinned from ear to ear and I just was like, what a beautiful way to end the film. And I like, not all of his films are like this, but I like that he recognizes that having a happy ending is not bad. Like sometimes it's the right move to have a really beautiful, happy ending.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times Best Picture nominees can be somewhat depressing. So
yes,
it was
as
nice
we've
to
seen
see,
this year.
Yeah, a happy one be nominated. So
yes.
Okay, dislikes for The Fabelmans. First dislike, this movie is a little long. I talked about pacing, and the pacing is pretty good in the beginning, and also I would say the end. The middle is where it kind of slows up a little bit. And a lot of things are happening that aren't maybe super duper interesting. So I think if you could cut some out of the middle, obviously he's like revealing, this is a spoiler, but Seth Rogen and Michelle Williams characters are having an affair. So that gets revealed during the middle of the movie. And that's a big focus in the middle of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that that could have been cut down a little bit. Some of the scenes in the middle could have been cut down a little bit. To maybe get this down to like 2 hours, 2 hours, 10 minutes, that probably would have been like perfect. So
I thought that scene was great. I think that one shouldn't be cut, but I agree with you.
Yeah,
the middle.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of times we talk about lengths of films. I don't know a better, I'm trying not to say just it was too long. I agree with you. It's the middle. This could have easily been condensed to me. Like there were things, it was cute to see him start dating, like, and make out with this crazy religious, like, teenage girl that was very
funny.
She was really confusing to me. That was funny, but I don't know that we needed as much of the interactions between them as we got. I just kind of like, this isn't, to me, this isn't who he ended up with. This isn't his first marriage or anything. So I just don't know why that was thrown in there. So I think it's the pacing, and like the middle section could have been really condensed very easily because this film is 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Another dislike, and we both agree on this, Michelle Williams is, what is this performance by Michelle Williams?
I am so happy you agree with me on this. I thought
it was kind of odd. So.
I thought people would jump down my throat for this. I did not like this performance. I liked her mannerisms. I thought that they were very, you know, what I think she's great at doing. Nothing I see when Michelle Williams does it looks like Michelle Williams doing it. She is so good about becoming another person, making a complete other person. The voice really startled me, creeped me out, confused me. I didn't like it. I know the hair wasn't her choice, but I hated the haircuts, hated them. I was just really confused by a lot of it. And I think the other performances around her were so good that it was kind of easy to overlook her. So I'm glad we watched this because, you know, earlier in the year, a couple episodes ago, I said I really would love for the Michelles to be tied for Best Actress. And now I personally am rooting for Michelle Yao above everyone. But if I hadn't seen this movie, just based on Michelle Williams' body of work and how good she is, I would have said they should tie or, you know, she could win. But anyway, it might be an unpopular opinion, but I did not love this performance by her. It was still good. It's still better than the average person for sure. But
yeah.
I've seen better and I think she can do better.
I didn't think the script that she got for her particular part was that great either. I think that her lines and stuff, some of them were very odd or maybe had like a double meaning that you couldn't fully understand. And it's like all of her lines are very like stilted. It's like just little bits and pieces here and there, but the only like full scene that I felt was like pretty good was the part where she was dancing in front of the car, because that felt like a like fully realized scene, that one and the one where like Sammy is showing her the film he put together of her and Seth Rogen's character, like, you know, going off by themselves. Thought those two scenes by her were really good, but then like the scene where she gets the monkey was weird because like the monkey's there for five
so
minutes
strange.
And then it's like never in the movie again. There's some other ones that are really, I thought the scene where they were telling them the kids that they were getting a divorce did not hit
weird.
As strongly as it should have. And that was partially due to her performance of that material. So yeah, not a huge fan of her performance in this movie. So
same. I did know, I remember Spielberg talked about the monkey that was real. They also got a monkey and the monkey would throw feces at them. Out of his cage.
Fun.
Yeah. I was like, that's not sanitary.
No, this kind of leads into the next dislike, but some things were just a little odd in this movie. Like there's the scene with the tornado where they like chase down this and they're acting like they're storm chasers and they go chase this tornado. Again,
but
another Michelle Williams scene that's not great. Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, that is, she took three of her four kids in the car and was like, let's go hunt a tornado. You know, I get if you're like a cool mom, you're like hippy dippy, you're like, I want to be cool. Or if you're someone who, I do think she had depression. So, you know, maybe it was just unmedicated and she was having some sort of episode, you know, that's awful. But it was so strange that that scene started, there was no resolution and suddenly they're fine. And I was like, is the car okay? Did the tornado pass? Was that fiction? Do you think there was a tornado? There wasn't a tornado. It felt very unresolved. And I felt the same way about everything to do with the religious teenage girl. I do forget her name. I'm really sorry. I should remember that.
I forget her character's name too.
But yeah. Steven Spielberg's character, Sammy, dates her for a little while. Totally fine that she's religious, but it was weird. She like kept talking about Jesus being hot. And I was like, that's odd. And
she has like a shrine to Jesus in her room.
Yeah, very
with, like,
weird. But she also
heart
has, like,
lights. Yeah.
She also has a lot of sexual energy, which, you know, good for her at 16. Go, girl. But also, like, what? That was just very confusing to me. And then this is where that bully scene comes up for me. I really liked, I think what Spielberg was trying to do with that bully scene, which you kind of talked about, Jared, is like, it's beautiful that he went ahead and painted the bully in a good light, because that's how the camera grasped him. Like that was what you saw in the camera. But I was very confused. It seemed like there were two bullies. It seemed like nothing ever happened to the other guy. I mean, he got beaten up, but that was about it. And I was like, this kid's a chump. Like, he should get in trouble. And then the other guy, the bully that he talks to, who was clearly very athletically talented and stuff, I felt like that scene ended weirdly. Like, it was kind of like that guy was mad at him. He cries. He pretends he doesn't cry because he's macho. It's the 50s. You're not allowed to cry. But I felt like that wasn't really resolved, and that was strange to me. I felt like they spent a lot of time setting up that scene and going through that scene, and then it just kind of ended abruptly for me.
Yeah. Also, I feel like prom might have been more wild than it was.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think of, like, Back to the Future and, like, the prom scene and that, and just, like, how crazy it is. Now, I don't know if that was actually what proms were like, but I kept thinking of that scene while I was watching this one. Like, I think prom would have been maybe a little more wild than what's going on here. So,
and it was cute and very 50s of them to, like, sit on the floor crisscross
applesauce
with their dresses on, like, to watch a film that their classmate made. But I was just kind of like, would this have happened this way? Like, in the 50s, would people have just calmly been like, it's prom, let's sit down on the floor and watch this film from a classmate? I just thought that might be how it worked. I don't really know. That's just such a foreign concept to me. And the fact that everyone would go along with it. No one would be like, no, I'm going to go streaking on the quad, or, you know, I'd rather go drink punch or make out in the hallway or something. It was weird that they all just kind of like sheep just followed each other.
I would have appreciated like a 20-second clip of the bullies being like, oh, we got to watch Sammy Fableman's movie, know,
this
something
guy
like
again
that.
With
like,
his
stupid
movies. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been maybe good to add.
Oh, I did think of one thing I liked and forgot to mention while we're talking about the bullies. Steven Spielberg talked about he was never proud of being Jewish and never really identified as Jewish or cared about it until he was making Schindler's List. That's what he talks about on his Stephen Colbert interview. I thought that was interesting. And I also really... there's plenty of movies, obviously, that talk about how Jewish people have been treated over the years. But I feel like the more time goes on, the less we hear about anti-Semitism, except in real life where it's happening. But movies, I feel like it hasn't come up a lot lately. And it was interesting to see how bullies in the 50s would talk to people about being Jewish, especially considering the war is over. We're Americans. We're not in Germany. That was strange to me. But I thought he did a really good job of painting a picture of how uncomfortable that could be. And narrow-minded. And I also don't think of some place like California being so narrow-minded about a Jewish boy in school. But I thought that was great that he put that into the film, because I think that very much creates a lot of matters to Steven Spielberg's identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was good to include as well. So, okay, we'll move on to our scores now for The Fabelmans. I am going to give this just a nice round 80. I think...
Lovely.
It was solid. There's some issues that we talked about. That's keeping it out of the 90, 95 range. But really good movie, really well made, interesting to watch the whole time. And I don't think it'll win Best Picture, but I think, you know, I guess it deserves to be one of the 10 that's nominated. Sure.
Yes.
So
I think it deserves to be in the nominated ones. I don't think it's going to win either. I'm giving it an 83, so just slightly above you. I really liked this. I mean, I haven't seen many films this year, so it's not like I have a lot that it's competing against. But I was really surprised, pleasantly surprised by this film. And if you enjoy filmmaking, or really just, I guess, learning about a lot of history, or you like Steven Spielberg, this is a great a great film for you to watch. And again, it has a happy ending, and I really liked that.
You can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Also, Facebook. Just search the Silver Screen Podcast there. You can follow our Letterboxd profiles in the show description, wherever you're listening in your podcast app of choice. And then on our next episode, we will be reviewing Creed 3, starring Michael B. Jordan, Jonathan Majors, and Tessa Thompson. So that'll be our next episode.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.